So this lecture is lecture number one, chapter 18, the genetics of viruses. Question is, are viruses living or not? What do you think? Yeah. They're not. Why? Okay, thank you. Yeah, Maggie. Okay, they use the live host to get around. Yeah. Because they can't live by themselves. Okay, so they're not alive outside of the host, but once they get inside, they start reproducing. Yeah. They don't have a brain. Okay. Are there other things that don't have brains that are living? Grass does not have a brain. Okay. So the question is, are they living or not? Well, the answer is, the current thinking is no, because they can't reproduce or do much of anything on their own. They actually need the help of living organisms, and it turns out that some books will call them obligate intracellular parasites, okay? And if you look at this list I've got here, I've got characteristics on the left, I've got what viruses have or don't have, and what living organisms have or don't have, and you can kind of compare, and you can kind of think, you know, debate among your friends whether you think viruses are living or not. But, you know, based on our current understanding, I think most biologists would consider them not living, although it is kind of a gray area for sure. The size of viruses is pretty interesting. Most viruses are smaller than bacteria. If you look at this picture here on the left, you'll see an animal cell right here, and then a bacteria next to it, and then right above, you'll see a little virus. And so you can kind of see the comparison between a eukaryote, a prokaryote, and a virus. And then on the right, you'll see this is a phage bacteria on the surface of an E. coli bacteria. And in fact, it turns out that the smallest virus is 20 nanometers, which is actually smaller than a ribosome. If you remember what is a ribosome? Anyone remember what a ribosome is? It's a ribosome. Yeah. Yeah, it's this big, kind of this big protein thing with some RNA mixed in, and that's where proteins are made. Exactly. So, shows you how small these things can get. Okay, this is kind of a cool slide. It shows you all the different human cells and tissues that are parasitized by viruses. So it's kind of if you go to medical school, you'll learn all about this. But here you've got viruses that attack the brain and central nervous system, that attack the lymphatic system, that attack the trachea and lungs, the heart, the GI tract, the skin, the reproductive system, and so forth. So there's a lot of different viruses. You may be familiar with some of these viruses. Maybe you've even had some of these viruses, and you've had to fight them off. So, anyhow, they're not the nicest things. Let's talk about viral structure for a minute. The viruses have a protective coat, which is called a capsid. Can you all say that for me, capsid? And the capsid is made of protein subunits, which are called capsomeres. You want to say capsomeres? So these capsomeres are these sort of spherical-shaped things you can see in my illustrations, and you put a whole bunch of capsomeres together, and you get a capsid. So all viruses have this. They have this outer protein coat. Some viruses have an additional coat which surrounds the capsid, which is called an envelope. And the envelope is actually made from the membrane of the host cell. Whatever cell the virus attacks, it will, when it leaves that host cell, it will become enveloped in the membrane, and hence the envelope. And not all viruses have this additional structure, but there's two very famous viruses that do have an envelope. One of them are the influenza viruses, which caused the flu, and that's where we get the word flu, from influenza. So those viruses have an envelope, and HIV, those viruses have envelopes. In fact, the the virus up here on top, the on the upper illustration with the envelope, that's HIV. And one of your free responses tonight will be to discuss HIV and how HIV works. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can think of it like that. But remember, these viruses are not cells. They're different. So they don't have a cell membrane. They just have a protein coat, you know, this protein structure that surrounds nucleic acid, which is in the middle. That's it. So viruses are very simple. Mm-hmm. You know, this was just, we discussed this in other periods, but I would say, like, what's the function of the envelope, kind of? And the envelope is, my answer, you know, this is my standard answer, I would say it's the result of natural selection, right? So what does it do? In the particular cells that this particular, the envelope viruses attack, there is some advantage to having an envelope. It helps it maybe infect the cells. It helps it when it leaves the cells. Who knows why? I'm sure it's different for every virus. So that's what I would say. You know, that's kind of my standard answer. There's some there's some natural selective reason that they have these envelopes, and specifically what they do, I'm not sure. It probably varies from virus to virus, actually. Okay, this is something that surprises my students. The viral genome. Different viruses can have different kinds of nucleic acids. So it turns out that some viruses have double-stranded DNA. And that would be the, if you know, I were to give a test, that's the standard answer students would give me. This must be the nucleic acid inside of viruses. But it turns out that viruses also have single-stranded DNA. Turns out that viruses also have double-stranded RNA. I didn't even know that existed. And some viruses have single-stranded RNA. So it's amazing how viruses will just use all these different kinds of DNA. And what you can see, this is a really cool table over here on the right, and it will show you some of the viruses that can be categorized in these different with these different kinds of nucleic acids. So up at the top, you see dsDNA. Well, that means double-stranded DNA, and these are all the viruses that have double-stranded DNA. Then you've got ssDNA, single-stranded DNA. Here's the viruses that have single-stranded DNA. And you've got dsRNA, and these are all the viruses that have double-stranded RNA. And then you've got ssRNA, single-stranded RNA, and here's all the viruses that have single-stranded RNA. And then you've got a variety of subgroups within the single-stranded RNA and how they actually use that single-stranded RNA. So they're very diverse in how they use hereditary material. So it's pretty interesting. Okay, how do viruses reproduce? First of all, let's remember a virus is an obligate intracellular parasite, so it does need a host to reproduce. It can't reproduce on its own. So up on my illustration on the right, you'll see a virus entering the host cell. And the first thing it does is it replicates its own nucleic acid. And in this case, it's DNA. But like I mentioned in the last slide, it could be single-stranded DNA, double-stranded RNA, single-stranded RNA. It could be all these different things. So it replicates that. And the way it's able to do that is it uses nucleotides and enzymes from the host and also energy, right, from the host. It's kind of like, the way to think about it, I would say, is imagine someone coming over to your house and just going into your kitchen and making a sandwich and drinking your soda and sleeping in your bed and, you know, watching your TV and all this kind of stuff. That's kind of what viruses do. They just kind of enter someone else's cell, you know, into a cell, and they just sort of take over. It's kind of annoying, kind of obnoxious. And then the other thing it does is it will go through the process of transcription and translation and end up basically getting the cell to make the proteins that will form its capsid. So we call them the capsid proteins are made. And then what it does is it will assemble all these. So it'll assemble the capsid proteins into a capsid that surrounds the nucleic acid. And then once it's done that, it can leave the cell. So that's kind of the process. And it leaves the cells in one of two ways. Down here, you'll see that it just, this is phage, and it just kind of pops out of the cell. It kind of explodes the cell, and there it goes, a bunch of phage viruses. Or down here, this is like what HIV does. When it leaves, it will actually, as it goes through the membrane, the cell membrane, it gets the cell membrane to surround it with an envelope of its membrane. So literally, you've got your capsid with your DNA inside, and then you've got this lipid bilayer that it kind of stole, essentially, from the host cell. And that's its envelope. That's what HIV does. Okay, I'm going to talk to you now about phage viruses. And I want to make this very clear. All the classic biology books, you know, for general biology courses, when they talk about viruses, they talk about phage viruses. Now, if I were to talk to you about, let's say, animals, we have lots of different categories of animals. We've got mammals, we've got reptiles, we've got birds, and so forth, right? Well, viruses come in different categories, too. And one of the categories of viruses are phage viruses. And the official name is bacteriophage. And we've encountered these earlier in the course, and they look like alien spacecrafts that land on the outside of bacteria. So what I'm going to tell you in the next couple slides refers to these kinds of viruses, okay? Not all viruses. So, I mean, if you are interested in viruses, you could take multiple courses on viruses when you go off to college. So I'm kind of just giving you a very short lecture, kind of giving you a taste of what viruses are like. So what phage viruses do is they can go through what's called the lytic cycle. Can you all say it for me, lytic cycle? And lytic refers to what happens at the very end, because at the end, they lyse the cell, and hence the term lytic. That refers to lysing. And they start off by landing on the outside of E. coli. They inject their DNA inside E. coli. They co-opt the E. coli metabolic system, and they start reproducing their own DNA. They reproduce their own proteins, and then they reassemble them all, and then when they're ready, they burst out of the cell. They lyse the cell. That's called the lytic cycle. Okay? Now, that's to be distinguished from the lysogenic cycle. So can you all say this word for me? Lysogenic cycle. Now, I've put them both on this, I put this particular illustration on the slide because they're actually linked together. And let me kind of go through the lytic cycle really quickly again. In the lytic cycle, you can see up here at the start, you'll see the little bacteriophage lands on the E. coli. You can tell that this is an E. coli because it's got circular DNA, right? It's obviously a prokaryote. In comes the viral DNA, which is red. The bacterial DNA is blue. And then you go along and the host DNA is digested. And then what happens is the viral DNA starts reproducing itself, so you get more viral DNA. Then the viral DNA starts making its own proteins. And then once again, you know, so it basically reconstructs the housing that it's going to need. And then once it sort of reassembles itself, it lyses the cell, and out come the brand new bacteriophages. That's the lytic cycle. Okay, that's just a review from the last slide. Now, there's this other cycle, which is kind of cool. Check this out. So the bacteriophage injects its phage DNA. There it is. But now it goes, it actually incorporates, this is kind of amazing, the viral DNA becomes incorporated into the bacterial DNA. And when it does, it takes on a new name. It's called a prophage. It's still the same DNA, but because it's in a new location, we give it a new name. Instead of calling it viral DNA, we call it a prophage. But really, it's viral DNA. Now, what happens is the bacteria is completely clueless about this, and it just starts reproducing. It starts reproducing, 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 reproducing. makes lots of itself, many, many, many generations, nothing happens. It's completely clueless that inside of its DNA is a little viral DNA. And then at some point in the future, could be three generations, could be 30 generations, could be 300 generations later, all of a sudden something stimulates this virus, this viral DNA to pop out of the bacterial DNA and go through the lytic cycle and then make lots of bacteriophages and then lyse the cell. So it's kind of insidious. It kind of goes undercover for a lot of generations. And that's called the lysogenic cycle. Yeah. No, because when it, what it's done is the viral DNA has come out of the of this, and now it's... Yeah, I mean, it's now out, so what's the point? Yeah, then it goes into the lytic cycle. Yeah, it goes into the lytic cycle, yeah. No, this is totally different. You're going to actually, one of your free response questions tonight is going to be on HIV. So you're going to actually learn how that whole cycle works in HIV, which is different than this. Okay? We're talking, remember, about phage viruses. And these are viruses just, that just attack bacteria. These don't attack us. But we may have similar, there may be similar things that happen in human viruses, but this is going to be just about viruses that attack bacteria. Okay, so quick review. The lytic cycle kills the host. The lysogenic doesn't kill the host because the viral DNA becomes incorporated into the host DNA, and it's now called a prophage. And then it will remain silent until, you know, some future generation when it will pop out and go through the lytic cycle. A virulent virus is a virus that only produces by the lytic cycle. So all it can do is go in, pop, you know, make itself pop out, explode the virus, and infect more and more bacteria and so forth. A temperate virus is a virus that can use both modes of reproduction. In other words, it can go through the lysogenic cycle, remain undercover for a lot of generations, and then every once in a while pop out and boom, cause the lytic cycle to occur. Now, here's something that may surprise you. First of all, what did I tell you about, you know, I don't know how long it was, in a previous lecture? Does anyone remember what's the central dogma? Does anyone remember what the central dogma is? Nobody. Yeah. Yeah. Can anyone say that in a different way? I mean, that's you've got the idea. Yeah. That's right. So information, the way it's stated, is information can only go one direction. It goes from DNA to RNA to protein. You can't have information go from proteins back to DNA or RNA, or from RNA back to DNA. That, you know, the information flow is one way. And does anyone remember who came up with this really important statement back in the 1950s, I believe it was? Or maybe it was the 60s, it was 50s or 60s. Okay, it was Francis Crick. So Francis Crick came up with it, and he came up with the central dogma. Now, our DNA can obviously reproduce itself, so it can do that. That's called the central dogma. Well, it turns out that in the early 1970s, a special kind of virus was discovered called a retrovirus. And they actually use RNA to make DNA, and hence the term retro. And the way or the reason they're able to do this is they have a special enzyme called reverse transcriptase. Can everybody say that for me? Okay. And so what they're able to do is they can transcribe DNA from RNA. So you can go, you can go backwards, it turns out, and because they use RNA as a template and they make DNA. And so this is really a violation of Francis Crick's central dogma. So this is interesting. Dogma's out there, right? This is the only way things can happen. But there are, you know, science moves forward, and then we find out that, well, what was once dogma is now no longer dogma at all. So it's kind of interesting. And what's interesting is HIV is a retrovirus. So when you do your free response tonight, realize that that HIV, the nucleic acid inside HIV is actually RNA. It's not DNA. And so inside of HIV is the enzyme reverse transcriptase, because you got to go backwards. Okay? You got to go make DNA. Okay, so that ends lecture one. Yeah, question.